Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
Hello.
It's the Ron Kelly Show.
Hey, yes.
The news you want.
Is the perception still that a black man with a gun is a criminal?
With the topics you need.
Marching might have been good for back in the day, but what kind of effectiveness is marching have on society today?
Ron Kelly.
Black males 18 to 24 years old have the highest homicide offending rate.
4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific. It's the Ron Kelly Show.
So don't get it twisted. Get it twisted.
On blogtalkradio.com.
All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Ron Kelly Show. It's Sunday, May 17, 2014. Thank you, everyone, so much for joining me today. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. We have a great show lined up for you this morning. And first up, we'll be talking about the FBI warning of 2006 and 2007 that warned that Klan members and members of other white supremacist groups will be joining police departments across the country, essentially to kill minorities under the cover of the law. Now, this makes perfect sense, ladies and gentlemen. It makes perfect sense because there just doesn't seem to be any other explanation for why police officers are killed on black people and only black people for any reason other than racism. Now, you know, we have our Rainbow Coalition white folks who are out there saying that it's not racism. And they're saying it's not racism because racism doesn't exist in their world. And unless it's a world outside of this earth, I can't understand why people would say that. But, you know, they say it because they don't practice racism. They don't practice racism. So they figure that, okay, since I don't practice it, it doesn't exist, which is totally patently false. Racism does exist in this country. It's alive and well. And, you know, the laws have been passed. You know, the laws of 1962, they were passed, the Equal Rights Amendment, all that. These laws apply as applied by whoever chooses to use them. These laws are open to interpretation, and many times these laws are skirted and nothing is done about it. Okay, so the police, the FBI warns that police officers, the Klan members and other Aryan Nation folk and other type of people are infiltrating police officers and police departments, rather. Makes perfect sense. I mean, it blew me away because I wasn't aware of this warning up until recently. And it actually blew me away. You know, and you have to figure, why would anybody shoot a 12-year-old kid now? 12-year-old Tamir Rice, T-A-M-I-R, Rice, was gunned down in a park while playing with a toy gun. And shot within minutes of the police's arrival. Now, there wasn't even a token effort to find out if the gun was a toy or not. Now, you figure you see a 12-year-old kid. You have to, I mean, just for the sake of just having a heart, you know, just put some human nature, humanity, a person with some level of humanity is going to try to find out if the kid's got a toy gun or not. Okay, these police officers have showed up at the scene of this in a park, actually. These police officers that showed us up on the scene for this did not even try, to determine whether this boy had a toy gun. Did not even try. Not even a token effort. And the boy was gunned down, 12 years old. Jesus, I mean, 12-year-old kid. And again, the racial lines this is being drawn against. I mean, the people who support the police are white. Folks, overwhelmingly, the people who support the police are white. The people who are against the police are against police brutality, I should say. They're not against police officers as a whole. There's a lot of great police officers out there. Some I know, even personally, who are great people and do a great job and they adhere to the letter of the law. But in every profession, you have bad apples. Bad doctors, there's bad lawyers, there's bad judges, you know, and every bad business people, in every profession you can think of, there's always a set of bad apples. You see, the thing about the police department is, you know, that the urgency to rid the police officers of bad apples, I think, is more important than any other profession, because, besides maybe medicine, because when police officers go south, they kill. You know what I mean? When police officers go bad, they kill. Let's see. I think we have Mayor Wayne Smith on the line. Good morning, Mayor Smith.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Doing well, sir. How's everything with you?
All righty.
Good. See, you're doing your due diligence on LinkedIn. I see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I teach you a little
bit
about that yesterday.
With some of those relationships for the show.
Yeah, I hear you, my good brother. How are you? You know, I saw your thing about Atlanta Housewives. So, you know, I don't even have to ask who holds the remote in the Smith household and you and wifey are sitting in front of the television.
Well, you know, it's interesting enough. I have a couple of projects. My wife is one. And so she does a fashion blog called Dazzling in Style. So yesterday, we were in New York. She had actually done an interview with one of the former participants in Atlanta Housewives, Marlo Hampton, who now is doing this whole tour called The Art of Style. So my wife went over to this reception and media blitz, and it's very interesting because it raises the question of what impact does all these reality shows have in a broader sense. And then in many instances, what impact does it have on the black community, the ones like Atlanta Housewives? So it's very interesting. The woman was, contrary to the perception of her when she was on the show, was a very pleasant woman, but definitely into fashion. But also she's marketing a concept called affordable fashion, which my wife's blog is about. And in addition, I have a new client who's actually doing a fashion show on August 15th at the Robert Tree Hotel in Newark. And, you know, and we'll talk off the air, Ron, but one of the things is we wanted to pitch to you was for every person, if we announced it a few times on the show and people from this area buy a ticket, we would give $5 to the Ron Kelly Show. The event is $35 in advance, $40 at the door. So even if they mention it at the door, we would give them, we would give the show $5 for every ticket that comes as a result of your promotional activity. So we'll talk off the air about that.
Okay, absolutely. Everybody be up on that. Mayor Smith and I are going to launch it. Your project very shortly. You know what I mean? I like to talk to Mrs. Smith. You know, we don't know unless we mostly do hard hitting stuff on the radio show, but it's all right to do a little fluff every now and then. So,
that was my point. You know, as we do all this hard news analysis and political analysis, sometimes the culture, you know, and one of the things I think I mentioned to you was that B.B. King died. And,
that's rocked the world. That was almost a good thing. Michael Jackson passing away.
And so the culture of blues, which has played a predominant role in American music life, and for us as a people, it was really talked about the travails of struggle, whether it was personal or societal or political or finding, whatever it was, a lot of that angst was typified in the music. And so I often tell young kids in this hip-hop generation that, you know, you enact a lot of your behavior is driven by the cultural things that you're engaged in. So, you know, when I was a kid, there were kind of two forms of music. There was always the romance stuff, so made you, you know, after the ladies. And then two was the music of struggle, whether it was We Must Have Unity by the OJs, or even calling us to question For the Love of Money. You know, there was just
everything is sad when it comes to black folks.
Right,
everything
right.
is sad when it comes to black. You know, the blues originated with black folk being held down and, you know, trying to sing to uplift themselves and trying to send messages to each other. And everything is down. Blues originated with black folk. Let's not get that twisted.
Absolutely.
Blues, black folk invented the blues and black folks were instrumental in creating jazz sound as well.
Right. So, I mean, we actually, right. The jazz sound is our sound. It's the only original American art form. Every other music came from somewhere else. So,
right.
And
then you have other offshoots of, black, you know, we had the blue-eyed soul at one time. We're going to get into this. We're going to get into this, Mayor Wayne. We're going to talk about some of this. So we're going to talk about the relevance of reality shows to black folks. Because I think I just kind of cringe when I see, you know,
it's a sign of the time. You know, Marvin Gaye, or, you know, his classic song of What's Going On. You see a lot of what we talk about in our political and governmental and societal analysis and conversation. A lot of what we see is driven by the music. Look at what Prince came out with, a song based on Freddie Gray. And that probably will live in the hearts of people longer than anything that we can say about that struggle.
Right. Did you
so
have
a
comment?
Lot of
Did you
what
have...
happens in society is really driven by the music, even of the broader American society. Look at what happened, and I was just a baby, three years old in 1960, when the Beatles hit from England, started a whole social revolution, this whole thing about free love, open expression, and also, you know, because they were non-traditional, you know, long hair challenged societal norms. And so it actually changed American society. And because that small rebellion about, you know, young men having long hair started people to question everything in American society. It even helped the civil rights movement.
Yeah, it was new. Mm-hmm. It was a new thing.
And you know, those young whites said, wait a minute, this is wrong what's happening, what some of our parents are doing to other people who are human beings just like we are. So a lot of that, you know, and all of it wasn't good. Some of it was negative because it also brought on that whole era of the drug culture, which we're still struggling with today, and it affects all people.
And we talked about that too, because mostly older white folks, you know, when you talk about people being stuck where they are, older white folks overwhelmingly are the ones who hold on to some of those old Jim Crow type of
No doubt.
And then the younger people, because they're growing up now, and they're able to see, because they're growing up in an era where Jim Crow was not necessarily the standard. Those
right.
old white folks, they've grown up in that area, and they hold on to some of those old views. And we're going to get into that, but let's talk a little bit about this. I was absolutely blown away by this. I saw it somewhere, I don't know, LinkedIn, Facebook, something. And when they were talking about, here's how it starts out. Because of the intensifying civil strife over the recent killings of unarmed black men and boys, many Americans are wondering, what's wrong with our police? Now, remarkably, one of the most compelling but unexplored explanations may rest with an FBI warning of October 2006, which reported that white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement represented a significant national threat. Now, I'm like, I just got like a brain overload because, Mayor Wayne, this is a perfect explanation to what's going on in America right now with the police department. Because, I mean, Jameer Rice, a 12-year-old kid. Now, if I'm anybody, you know, you're gonna try to see. I mean, a 12-year-old kid playing with a gun in the park. You have to consider the fact that the gun may be. You know, you got a 12-year-old kid playing around. The gun hasn't fired. You have a 12-year-old kid playing with a gun in a park in Detroit, who gets gunned down within minutes of the police's arrival. A 12-year-old kid. So you know, and who else? In my estimation, who else would want to gun down a 12-year-old kid unless there's some other, unless there's some other behaviors going on there, Mayor Wayne? I just can't wrap my head around that. Why anyone would gun down a 12-year-old kid without at least making a token effort to find out if the gun was real? Yeah. So this is something that really caught me out there, and it makes perfect sense. That perfect sense.
Yeah, look, I mean, look at the poor young lady with Tamir Rice. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah,
it's
young, he's a boy, yeah. He's a young boy, 12 years old.
Yeah, so it's almost an epidemic proportion where, so the question is, where do we go and what do we do? I think we're people are putting as much attention to it as they humanly can in a struggle for justice, but you know, we've got to figure out how do we change it and stop and limit it from continuing to happen.
Yeah, anybody who wants to call in, I missed a couple phone calls last week. For some reason, I got a couple phone calls because I did decide to come on the air last week, and I missed some people tried to call me from around the country. I didn't. Something is wrong. Something is up with the Skype or whatever. But try me today, try us today, I should say, 347-426-3214, that's 347-426-3214. Once again, 347-426-3214. And we're going to be changing the time again back to Friday.
Okay.
It's going to be Fridays at 6 p.m. Fridays at 6 p.m. We're going to be stopping. Because a lot of y'all are in church and you're not listening to the show, and the numbers are dropped off dramatically. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to our Friday slot where we had great numbers and you guys were falling in like crazy. Lots of downloads, et cetera, et cetera. The numbers are outstanding. They've fallen off significantly enough for me to decide that we're going to bring the show back to Fridays at 6 p.m. So Fridays at 6 p.m. starting next Friday afternoon.
So, Ryan, is that the 22nd or the 29th?
That's the 20. That's this upcoming Friday, the 22nd.
Okay.
The 22nd, we're going to put the show back on. See, right in the thick of everything that's going to be going on with the other radio personalities that are on the we'll be right in the middle of that. So join us next Friday, the 22nd. We're going back to the 6 p.m. We're going to Friday to 6 p.m. I'll post it on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and all the other websites. But, you know, getting back to this now, and also a little bit later on, we're talking about who bailed out Alan Bullock. You know, Alan Bullock ran away with the kid that would take the famous picture of the kid on top of the police car who was convinced to turn himself in Baltimore, and he was slapped with a $500,000 bail higher than the police officers that allegedly committed the crime against Freddie Gray. And somebody bailed him out. Somebody bailed him out. We don't know who so far. I think it was Floyd Mayweather. You heard it here. I do believe it was Floyd Mayweather. Somebody paid the $50,000 10% bail for Alan Bullock, and I believe it was Floyd Mayweather. That's my best guess. Floyd
or somebody with that kind of dope.
Yeah, Money Mayweather may have clocked down to $50,000, which is equal to lint under the couch pillow.
Mayweather's come up under some controversy, you know, with the domestic violence stuff. And there were a lot of women in particular who said we should not be glorifying Mayweather in light of
And he made $100 million anyway.
Uh-huh.
And he made $100-something million anyway. So, because maybe
in addition to his own rehabilitation in that area, maybe he should donate some significant money to the domestic violence movement that
maybe
may have made some of that criticism.
He could drop a couple of million dollars in the Ron Kelly show, and I'll be signing my resignation from my job tomorrow. if you have the money to go nationwide and do all the other stuff and be blinking
that's a point to be made. That and I made this point on a panel discussion last night in Newark, that we have to marry, you know, talented brothers like yourself who are trying to develop a media outlet because, you know, with the and there's a group that I'm working with now that's putting together a daily newspaper for Newark. Because still in urban communities, there's a great digital divide. But what we have to marry is people who are doing efforts like yours with people who have the money to support those kinds of initiatives, because all it does is give us the growth that we need in our communities. But
media is an important strategy.
You know, black radio
is
decimated. So we need to use all of these new technologies. Ron, you certainly have been an early adapter, and we're out there doing your thing on radio. So now we have to, and part of the reason why I'm so happy to partner with you is because you have been in the struggle and you're consistent about
it. A long time, man.
We gotta marry these efforts with the people who have money. And listen, even if they don't get a return on their investment, they can afford to do it.
And the return is that, you know, when you're talking about public service, you know, the return is that folks are being educated. Folks are being educated, emboldened, and, you know, and enlightened in a lot of ways in regards to what's going on in the world. Because some people beyond Atlanta Housewives, some people don't know. Some people don't know what's going.
No, you absolutely
some people
right.
don't know what's going on in the world. Some people,
absolutely.
Mrs. Smith excluded, but some people are.
No, she keeps up. Yeah, she definitely keeps up, but she has her little treats like Atlanta Housewives, and I get forced into watching it, so I'm keeping up. But it does give me a storyline in terms of seeing what people are watching and how we can engage them at a level where we can inform, enlighten, and get them involved.
And see, in many ways, black folks are being, you know, like, I don't want to delve into it too deep. Black folks are being, you know, most of these reality shows that deal with people going after each other, besides like a marriage boot camp and stuff like that, these shows are transitioning over to black folks exclusively. There's the Mary. You got another one coming out about the hair in Atlanta. You got the housewife. You got the house husband. There's, you know,
you got the divas of
LA. Because it's easy to pit black folks against each other, I guess. But
it's also the cost of production is cheaper. You don't have a named celebrity person until they get celebrity from the show. Then they start to demand more money. But the other thing is, who is the biggest consumer of television? Do you think Empire, the show Empire, would be on the air? Now, I was reading online yesterday, Ron. You remember John Singleton?
Yeah, he was the director.
Boys in the Hood. He was the producer of Boys in the Hood. I guess that was in the 80s. He's now putting together a show that's been greenlighted by Fox, which will almost replicate what Empire is doing. It's a drug dealing story. In Empire, Terrence Howard is made his fortune for the record label from drug dealing, vis-a-vis the Jay-Z storyline. So this story is more in depth. They're not even going into the legitimate. They're in the drug business. And so and it's multicultural. It's got us and a Mexican. So you know they.
Oh Lord, a Mexican.
Yeah, they're going to dovetail the black and the brown. And to me, it's a replication of the old black exploitation movies. I remember growing up when Superfly, remember Superfly, Ron?
Yes, I do. I was too young to go into the movie. I was a little kid, and I was too young because I think the age was, I think it was PG-13 or something like that.
It might have been an R. Superfly had some sex in it.
PG-17, something like that. But whatever it was, a little kid, and I was too young to go inside the movie theater.
Let me tell you how powerful the media is. It was with the advent of Superfly in the city, at least in this area, more jokers was trying to deal cocaine than I ever saw, influenced by what they viewed as the success of Superfly. Now, the guy who played Superfly, Ron O'Neill, they ended up doing, I think, a Superfly 2 and a Superfly something else. They did, I think, two sequels. and he got out of the game. But more cases than not, you know, more people end up who adopted that lifestyle in jail for long periods of time, ruining their life. I mean, so, you know, and then so they come out with different gyrations of that at different times. The modern version was New Jack City. You saw that.
Mm-hmm.
With Wesley Snipes. So people, if they forgot, Wesley Snipes ended up dead and about to go to jail. So, you know, it's but the culture, those movies and those images drive what a lot of people do. You know, these hip hop shows that the sisters making a ton of money who produces them, and they had one of the sorority shows, the sorority community, which is an educated that Black Greek Life, which is an educated active group, got the show canceled because they didn't want the good that they do portrayed so negatively. But it, you know, media culture sometimes drives our politics in such a way, influences what we buy, what we do, what our young people end up aspiring to, that it is, we got to deal with it sometimes. It is, you know, and you know, people like you and I, we spend a lot of time staying informed about what affects us from a broader societal point of view, but we also have to be engaged in what these cultural nuances and how we sometimes challenge, but how we even use them to get people to another place. That's my little pitch for the day.
All right. George Zimmerman is thinking of moving out of Florida because he says he's having too much trouble.
Listen,
you should have trouble.
Again with him? Did he get a...
Again. Shooting with somebody on the highway. He's non-news. Anyway, we'll take a break because we've gone way over. We'll take a break, everybody. We'll come right back. Phone number here is 347-426-3214. It's 347-426-3214. Mayor Wayne Smith and your truly Ron Kelly. Here's the Ron Kelly Show for Sunday, May 17, 2015. And we are on blogtalkradio.com.
The Ron Kelly Show. blogtalkradio.com. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com. There was a need in talk radio. And one man will fill that need.
What kind of effectiveness is marching out of society today?
And you too can be a witness. The Ron Kelly Show. On blogtalkradio.com.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Oh, yes, indeed. Absolutely. This is the Ron Kelly Show, Sunday morning, halfway through. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Yours truly, Ron Kelly, along with Mayor Wayne Smith, Irvington, New Jersey, is here with us as well, and thank you all so much for joining us this morning. I'm sure there's other things that you had to do, but I'm glad that you took a moment or two to hear and partake of Ron Kelly Show with Mayor Wayne Smith. Now, I know you guys were expecting us to talk about this white supremacy, and we will talk about it because it does, you know, we have to keep the feet to the fire, so to speak, when it comes to these type of things, because Black folks are being gunned down And, you know, and I talked about it last week, man, Wayne, that overwhelmingly the supporters of police officers, and I need to say, everybody, because folks tend to, you know, especially on LinkedIn, oh, boy, they love taking shots at me. And they just don't know that I love it just as much as they do. because the posts get major exposure when I post anything on LinkedIn. So I appreciate those people who think that they're annoying me, but actually they're emboldening me to push even harder. You know, and now this thing here with the police, and I know a lot of police officers. I'm, you know, the sheriff, shout out to State County Sheriff Richard Burnick, Commander McCrary, folks I know, Sergeant Lou Spagnola from Patterson Police, you know, even Chief Chase, who I had an occasion to meet a couple of times, Irvington, New Jersey. I don't know if he's still the chief, but anyway, there's some stew brewing over there. I'm not privy to all the information.
I'm going
to
stay out of that one, Ron.
Because we have the former Mayor Wayne Smith, Irvington, New Jersey. We're going to bear around that one. But shout out to Chief Chase if he's still chief. Anyway, so I know a lot of good police officers, Mayor Wayne. So I'm not here to down every police officer in the United States. Because imagine what kind of society we would have if there were no police. And even though a lot of crime still takes place, they wait for the police to pass it and they start shooting. But somebody has to come back and stop whatever's going on. You know what I mean? Even if they're not there when it starts, they have to be there to stop it. So I appreciate the police, you know, and I have nothing against the good guys. But as I said, in every profession, you're going to have people who are every profession, you're going to have people who are bad apples, so to speak. You know, you have bad doctors, bad lawyers, bad, you know, bad mayors in some cases. You know, there's bad in everything. Bad presidents like Bush was. Anyway, but when it comes to bad police officers, with bad police officers, somebody winds up dead as opposed to, you know, other professions. So no one's against police. And I certainly am not. Mayor Wayne is, you know, I guess I can speak with Mayor Wayne Smith, who also is not against police. But there are some things going on that are not kosher. And you know, I think Mayor Wayne, here's one of the biggest problems. Is that, you know, when the police officers shoot someone, they get time off with pay. They don't have to say anything. The investigation drags on forever. And see, because I think that most black folk, while we're not, we don't condone our people being shot, but when it does happen, we want something to happen fast. Just like it happens if I go out there and shoot somebody, I'm going to get arrested right away. And I'm going to have to talk or not talk, whatever, right away. And I think the frustrating thing with police officers in police-involved shootings is the police officers kind of get a red carpet treatment. And, you know, and the investigation drags on forever. The authorities or the powers that be go on and say, well, you know, let's wait and let it play out. It always plays out in the favor of the officer. So I think, Mayor Wayne, that's one of the most frustrating things for the average black person out here who is watching these things, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, listen, there is, you know, this whole criminal justice system and the idea that we need criminal justice reform is a big one. And for instance, one of the challenges that we have had as a society is that a person could get accused of something, go to jail. And I think you're constitutionally required in most states to have a speedy trial so that you're not languishing in jail for a bunch of time. And you know, of course, you got courts backlogged and so forth and so on. That's another issue. But you're supposed to be entitled in this society to what they call a speedy trial. Am I right?
Yes, it's speedy justice.
Right. And I think that's what folks assume when a situation happens like this. They want some kind of speedy response. So the best two scenarios that we've seen in recent history was the situation where the young man was shot in the back after being stopped. And Ron, you can fill in the name for me. It's gotten Walter so Scott. Overwhelming, I can't remember the names as I age.
Walter Scott's
shooting. And right away, the police were aggressive, and I think the police chief was aggressive in this case. He not only, after reviewing the tape, had the guy arrested, but they moved for a swift indictment. And I think I was at the National Action Network, and I heard Reverend Sharpton say that was the kind of response that many communities are really expecting when these situations happen. And the other scenario, though there was a lot of controversy around it, was the prosecutor in Baltimore, the young lady, who took the evidence as quickly as she humanly can and went for an indictment.
Yeah, but see, now everybody's asking for, you know, now, see, now how many times, Mayor Wayne, his civil rights activists asked for a special prosecutor in these police-involved shooting cases? How many times have we requested special prosecutor? Now, all of a sudden, because State Attorney Marilyn Mosby has decided
Now they do.
But how many times have we asked for one and never got one? But as soon as they get indicted, now they want one. And see, and now they took. And let's move back to the Walter Scott killing for a moment, Mayor Wayne, that happened in North Charleston. Now, what if there was no camera? What if there was no video? See, the fix was already in, and this police officer had already lied. He didn't file a report. He lied a report. He had already filed his lie of a report. And this would have been just another police shooting hadn't that young man been on the scene and shot that video, because a lie was already in. And secondly, Mayor Wayne, and I've read some stuff about black officers who have been witnesses to some of these shootings and have kept their mouths shut. Now, a black officer came upon, he was the first one to respond after Walter Scott had been killed. And what did he say? What does his report say? Now, the National Bar Association, which is a organization of black attorneys, black lawyers and judges, are asking, what did he say? What does his report say?
Some who are saying that these officers who were complicit should also be indicted.
Right, and they should. And they should, because if you can't, hey, look, conspiracy, you know, the continuance of a lie to avoid prosecution, you know, they should be questioned as well. You know, so this is what created the Baltimore situation, because first of all, every time it's the same old story. Let's wait it out. People, let justice doesn't happen. You know, just us happens, but justice doesn't happen. And this is what frustrates folks to the point where Michael Brown left in the street like a deer. You know, you ever ride down the highway, you see a deer sitting out there, and the next day he's still laying out there. Well, they left Michael Brown out in the street like a deer. Didn't even cover the body up. I wouldn't want to, I mean, if that was my son, I'd be in jail right now.
It's interesting, Ron, that you mentioned that. While I was mayor, and this was in the Passaic County, Patterson area, that people were telling me, because I was head of the urban mayors at the time, that when people were victims of homicide, and I don't know if it was the coroner's office was backed up or they didn't have a person in Patterson in particular, they had to rely on the county, but they say bodies would lay out in the street like it was you know, and
uncovered.
Okay. Huh?
Uncovered.
Yeah.
Give the person some respect.
It's a prevalent thing, and those dignities we have to demand from everyone. If that goes to the dehumanization of why behavior occurs, if we allow even those simple things when a person is killed not to, and I know some of that has to do with they don't want to bother evidence. But we've got to come to a middle road where a person, you know, in those situations, people are outraged by bodies laying. And they say it's, and that was during the time I was mayor, that was a few years ago, where that, you know, I remember being on a radio show in or a television show in Patterson. They have a beautiful studio up there. And people were telling me that that was a common occurrence.
Right. So it's a disrespect, and the disrespect, and you know, and folks feel disrespected when these
Dan Donovan, I'm going to go off
track. Just got elected to Congress.
He was elected to Congress. So that was his reward for fixing the Eric Garner case. That was his reward. Now he's a congressman, and his assistant will move into that spot. Here's a twist, though. Now, we had Marilyn Mosby indict those six officers in the Baltimore case, but now you have Dane County DA Ismael Ozane, who's black. And he declined to prosecute a white Madison, Wisconsin police officer, Matt Kenney, in the death of unarmed Tony Robinson Jr., who was shot for nothing more than acting erratically. You see, now, I watch Jail, and I watch some of these shows, particularly the one that comes on Saturday night, it's on all night, Lockup.
Uh-huh.
Which show now on the program Lockup, it shows people who are in prison, and they show, you know, and when there's disturbances, they show how the corrections officers put those occurrences down. Now, and you can't use firearms in jail or prison.
Right.
Firearms are prohibited in jail or prison because if you get overwhelmed, they're going to take your gun. But they've got some of the most, effective non-lethal means of putting the person down. I mean, wood blocks, rubber bullets hurt. You know, rubber bullets hurt, wood blocks hurt, stun shields. They have all the latest equipment for putting a person down. And I can't understand why.
But the only
difference
is a less likely chance they're going to be able to fire back. With a lethal weapon.
But sometimes, Mayor Wayne, sometimes we know a person doesn't have a weapon. These people were unarmed.
Well, yeah,
you
know what the police story is. The police story is we thought he had a gun, we thought we saw a gun, you know, those kinds of things. And I'm just doing a comparison with the.
Yeah, prison. I was in fear of my life,
or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
In the prison system, they got a little bit less of a dynamic going on. So they can plan to use more non-lethal weapons than the police can, who have to be concerned with. And this is the arguments we're going to hear in some of these court cases, or some of the policy discussions that's going to happen. And you know, I've been there in the governmental seat, so I'm just posing some of the arguments they're going to make as we try to shape this policy, and we got to be prepared to have responses to that. So And you're right. A lot of these cases were people were did not have a weapon, but from the standpoint of using some non-lethal scenarios on the street where a person might have a lethal weapon that we know of, we've got to be able to take him out or down without him using that lethal weapon, not only against the police, but even accidentally shooting some innocent person as an innocent bystander. Look at the deaths we've had in our community where people who have just been in the wrong place at the wrong time. It had nothing
right, but I don't think you right. But I don't think you should shoot a person because they have a hammer, or you should shoot a person because they're holding a broomstick. And in many cases, Mayor Wayne, you know.
Well, here's the one disagreement I would have. If you got a hammer a person is swinging a hammer at my head and the police respond, and they don't want to shoot him because he got a hammer. He had me with a hammer. Take him down, but he's going to kill me if he hit me in the head with the hammer.
Right, but sometimes the police officers, like, for example, they had an instant switch in New York where there was a guy running around hitting people on the head with a hammer. Story that was running in New York recently, and they finally caught up with the guy, and they shot at him, and now they shot at him four times. Now, I don't think it's necessary to shoot at somebody four times. They got a hammer, and they're surrounded by police officers. You know,
you should have weakened them enough that you could have bought them.
Shoot them in the leg, shoot them in the thigh. If you shoot a person anywhere on their body, they're going to stop doing whatever it is they were doing. Trust me. Now, if you shoot them and they keep moving, or they keep coming at you after you shoot them, okay, then there's a situation where you may have to take the person out. But
But I think that for the most part, people they should try to. If somebody, I don't think a hammer is a lethal weapon unless you stand there and let somebody bash your brains in. It's not a lethal weapon. They got to get close enough to you to use it. So police officers have an unfair advantage, especially when there's more than one of them and they've got 15 shots, you know, 30 shots between them, you know, and the person doesn't have a weapon. So I think that the police officers should at least try to employ some non-lethal means of catching up with the person before they actually take a person's life. Because I don't think that, you know, that's necessary. But getting back to the FBI, I'm going to do this right quick before we break out of here. But the FBI, it was warning that the FBI, here's how the story went. Because the FBI was warning that white supremacists and Klan members would join police departments. And it's a perfect cover because they can do this Now, several key events preceded that report. Now, the federal court found that members of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department formed a neo-Nazi gang, so, you know, black conspiracy theorists. Later, the Chicago police fired John Burge, who was a detective with reputed ties to the Ku Klux Klan, after discovering this John Burge tortured over 100 black male suspects. Now, you know, they did have a place where they used to take people in Chicago, some nondescript warehouse, where the police officers would take black folks and torture them and terrorize them. That's how, when they got to this John Burge, that's how all the news came out. Thereafter, the mayor of Cleveland discovered that many of the city locker rooms were infested with white power graffiti. Years later, in Texas.
Chicago actually put together a reparations fund, they're calling it, to pay back all those people that were prosecuted illegally by the former police chief.
Years later, the Texas Sheriff's Department discovered that two of its deputies were recruiters for the Klan. Recruiters. Now, in prophetic fashion, after the FBI's warning, white supremacy extremism in the United States increased exponentially. From 2008 to 2014, the number of white supremacist groups reportedly grew from 149 to nearly 1,000. With no apparent abatement in the infiltration of law enforcement. Now, you can go here. This year alone, 7 San Francisco law enforcement officers were suspended after an investigation revealed they exchanged numerous white power communications laden with remarks about lynching African Americans and burning crosses. 3 reputed Klan members that served as corrections officers were arrested for conspiring to murder a black inmate. At least 4 Fort Lauderdale, Florida police officers were fired after an investigation found that the officers fantasized about killing black suspects. So there's plenty. And see, this is exactly why this is going on in the police departments today, why black people are being murdered. You remember, I don't know if you remember, you know, I'm a big Dirty Harry fan.
Oh, yeah.
You know, big Dirty Magnum Force and all of, I love those movies. Clint Eastwood, right. I put that Obama chair situation as a Republican. That turned me off to him, you know. But I still like those old movies.
He was talking about running for office or something at one time.
Mm-hmm. He's like 89, circling the bowl. I don't think he should be running from the Grim Reaper. He should be running from the empty chair. Or running from the Grim Reaper. But he had a movie, in the movie Magnum Force, the lieutenant, there were 4 police officers who were going around killing people, you know, people who might have got off, for example.
Oh, yeah, I remember, yeah.
People who got off, people who beat the system.
Yeah, he was doing the Charles Brunson with a badge.
Yeah, he was killing those. And that's not so far-fetched.
Well, yeah, you have to, you remember Bernard Goetz?
Yeah, the Getson went on a rampage.
He was following Charles Brunson in that vigilante thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he went on that train hoping
somebody would mess with him. Mm-hmm.
That somebody would come after him. And see, these type of things, this is exactly what's going on, because they talk about retraining and stuff like that. You can't retrain somebody not to be a racist, you know. And you can't tell me that out of the million police officers that are walking the streets of America today, that
there's at least a third of them, if not more, are white supremacists or Klan members. Now, I was in Passaic the other day. I was driving from Passaic, and I saw this police officer. And I'm not saying he was racist, but his arms were inked up with tattoos, and I just don't. There's just something wrong with that. You know, there's something wrong with a police officer's arms being inked up from wrist all the way up to past the sleeve, you know, because he was wearing a short sleeve uniform, and his entire both arms were inked up. And it's just to me, Mayor Wayne, I know you headed the police force at one time. Do you think the police officers? I'm going to put you in a hot seat for a minute. Do you think police officers should be allowed to do that? Or
it's again, Ron. You know, we go to what we started the show talking about, the cultural nuances in society. So we went from a society where generally kind of a military version, you couldn't have certain things. You couldn't, in the probably 50s and 60s, even up into the 70s and 80s, you probably wouldn't be allowed to display those. Now you have a culture now where tattoos represent everything. So, I think you're...
But they can't wear facial hair, man, Wayne. They can't wear facial... Police officers are not allowed to wear facial hair.
Well, no, that's not true. That was overturned. Particularly if they have a religious reason. So that there were some Muslims who sued in Newark. In fact, I happened to know one of the
Muslim,
guys.
Right. If you're a Muslim, you can do it. But
if you have a religious reason why you have to have facial hair.
Right.
So that's why Muslims, some interpretations of Islam, you know, say you're supposed to have facial hair. But that's, you know,
right.
The courts gave them some relief in that regard. So now, you know, it's a whole different scenario about what person's individual rights are. Now, I would venture to say if the tattoos were to display some racial connotations of any type, some criminal element like alleged motorcycle gangs or a gang culture, then you could not wear those. But we live in a society where tattoos are very common now.
Well, those things can be coded too, Mayor Wayne. Those tattoos can be coded. I mean, they don't have to, you know, because sometimes...
Yeah, who's to determine whether or not the person has the personal liberty to have those tattoos or not? And so that's where we get into this whole, what is your personal rights or as long as it does not... You know, I'll give you an example. It was in the news, so I feel a little comfortable about talking about it. We had a police officer who made, from a personal standpoint, for many people, an outrageous comment about gays in a hip-hop song. This police officer happened to be a union leader, and I won't get into, you know, the outcome of anything. Happened to be a union leader, and he was, you know, in his earlier life, he had made a hip-hop record, which had some, what many people consider, inappropriate comments about gays. Now, his comment was, it's artistic and cultural freedom. I don't let that affect my job as a police officer. Made national news. The guy I know personally is, from what I was able to determine, a pretty decent police officer. We viewed it as inappropriate. You do not want to give the appearance that a police officer is biased against any population. So, of course, he was needed some discipline. You know, I'm not at liberty to determine, you know, tell what discipline, but he was
disciplined.
Let's just say he was disciplined. So, you know, but it was a big legal debate inside with the lawyers, because, of course, he had to protect himself, and we had to protect the city. And we also had to treat him. We also mandated to, when you're in government, to try to be as fair as you possibly can, and at the same time, protect the integrity of the institution. So that was, you know, that's kind of an example of that. Then we had some, you know, you had some police officers who, one woman was, I think, lost her job because she did a Playboy ad. Now, some people say, what does that have to do with her conduct in a blue uniform out there on the street? But she lost her job, what they considered conduct unbecoming a police officer. There was another example that almost escaped me that I wanted to talk about as well.
She had a body that definitely deserved to be in Playboy, but anyway.
I believe that in the
I know she could. Smith might be hovering around somewhere, but
point is, you know, police are so police officers do have a high standard, but there's this whole division, a line of what is private and personal, and what they do off duty, as opposed to what they do on duty. And so that's also going to figure out, like, so when you see the tattoos, like you said, it could be coded. But unless you know and explicitly demonstrate that that code represents something derogatory to someone that they're sworn to protect and serve, then we got an issue there. So, yeah, you know, so that's these are some of the nuances of the challenges we have as we try to shape up a fair police presence. So you listen, we want cops to protect and serve. Nobody wants to have a society where anarchy rules. But at the same time, you want police officers to conduct themselves in a way that's fair and impartial and does not abuse the authority that's vested in their hands. But there's a balance to how we get there, and it's going to be a major debate for our society.
And retraining is nonsense, because you can't train somebody out of being antithetical to black folks or minorities. You can't train a person out of that.
Well, let's say this. And, you know, I'm going to go back to the top of the show where we talked about culture, and I want to go to a point that Reverend Sharpton made in one of his books. And he spoke at Michael Jackson's funeral. And in fact, Michael's mother asked him, because, you know, Michael was under some controversy. But Reverend Sharpton said, you know, people don't understand who Michael was. Michael made it acceptable for suburban kids to listen to black music, and he was the king of pop. Not the king of soul or the godfather of soul. He was the king of pop. So when young white kids look at Michael, or they look at Michael Jordan, they have a different image of a black man. And so culturally we become, listen, part of, and so what Sharpton did is he made the leap of Michael in the music and the culture to the acceptance of a black man by some whites to be president of the United States. So sometimes you can affect the behavior by the culture you promote. Though I agree with you, you can't teach that necessarily in a classroom with retraining. But one of the things, and that's why culture and image enhancement and what people do on the media has a lot to determine about how we act as a society. So, you know, though I agree with you, Ron, that's a very difficult thing to teach. Dr. King said that we can't legislate love. We can't legislate people not hating us. But what we can legislate is their conduct. You know,
right.
So what we've got to do is we can't make people love or hate anybody, but we can. You're going to treat people a certain way. And that
right.
can be legislated. If when you pull up, you can't abuse people. And the cameras will determine how you conducted yourself. You know, they've got all these cameras where some cops are, you know, talking inappropriately to people, this, that,
but
the other.
And they're able to turn the cameras off. See, they shouldn't be able to turn those cameras off. There was just a situation where the camera was shut off for 22 minutes.
That's what we've got to lobby for.
Right.
That's what
we've
got
to
lobby for, that the individual
right.
can't do it. And we've got to be careful even with having superior officers have the ability. Ryan, you make a very
good
point.
Nobody can turn the camera
turn
off.
Turn it on. If the camera's on, it's on, and we should be
until
able to,
you're done. It runs
right.
for 8 hours.
Yep.
Runs for 8 hours. Whatever your shift is, the camera runs for 8 hours.
Turn that camera
can't
in.
Turn it off.
We retrieve the
then
data somewhere, some neutral place. And that
that's
family,
right. Then we can then we can look at it. All right, everybody,
so
15 seconds.
So see, you know what they say, the devil's in the details.
Yeah, we got to get those details.
Yeah,
all right, everybody.
So while we struggle to get the broad legislation, somebody
right.
has got to dig into the details to see how it operationalizes. And sometimes the broad idea, it's a great idea, let's do it. Now, it doesn't always work out that way when you get into the details. So we've got to pay attention to the broad policies that we ask for And then we've got to be able to have the ability to monitor how it is implemented. Because, you know, they say the devil or the God is in the details.
Right. All right, we're a couple minutes over. All right, thank you, Mayor Wayne Smith. Thank you so much for joining us today. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to the Ron Kelly Show featuring Mayor Wayne Smith. We'll see you guys back here next week for another edition. So until then, take care and go out there and have yourself a nice rest. What's left of the weekend. Take care, everybody.
Take care, Ron. Bye-bye.
Thank you.